Chapter 2. Mules and Other Problems. It was my practice to stay out in the wilderness until one of three things happened. The cart was full, the food was gone, or I was out of ale. It was a good rule. It did exactly what it was designed for, which was to keep me drunk. If the cart was full, there was a good chance I could get more ale with the money it would bring, and if I was out of ale, well, that was just inexcusable. This time I was out of ale. Ambrosius was in a good mood that day. Sometimes he got the idea he liked it better out in the woods, down at the foot of the mountain and away from everyone else, outside of his pen and so forth. I understood. I wasn't that excited about people either. It's not that I hated them, or that I hate them now. I really don't. But people and I often seem to disagree. And after a while, I learned that we got along much better when we were apart. Mixing in with the rest of them was unavoidable, though, if I wanted to sell my haul or eat or any of the rest of it. So I'd have to coax the old boy and speak sweetly into his ear to get the hitch on him. I'd make promises to him so he would agree. I'd say things like, "Hey, old boy, I know how you feel. I understand, believe me. But we have to go back. I can't keep feeding you out here." This was a lie. There was grass everywhere. Ambrosius just wasn't very smart. "And we need to take this cart to market. Come on, old boy. Old friend. Let's head back and I'll brush you down again. Hey. Hey, Ambrosius. Let's go back. And after dark, we'll head out to yonder's farm and I'll let you fuck his mare again. Huh? What do you say, boy? For me? Can you haul the cart one more time for me? Can you haul it for yonder's mare?" He could, of course. The mare's best days were behind her, even by beastly standards, but Ambrosius had a way of seeing past her faults to the lovely lady underneath. It was touching to watch. I'd look on sometimes while he shifted around her for the best approach, whispering encouragement and the like. I guess he'd appreciated it. I'd have a drink of whatever I had at the time and hiss, "That's it, old boy, let's give that young lady a mule." And then when it was all over, I'd sneak him away and we'd walk back home together in Singthgunt's pale light, and I'd scratch him behind the ears and drink and tell him how well he'd done. It made me happy to do these things for Ambrosius. It made me happy that one of us was getting laid. I had to pay for it myself, and the rates were such that you had to dig for quite a while before you could go see a whore. Well, a good whore. I was in a fine mood. I just sweet-talked Ambrosius into the hitch, and we were making a good pace home. The haul wasn't as much as I would have liked, having run out of the ale before running out of cart space. But I was at the end of a fairly decent run, and I estimated this last load would put me over for one of my semi-annual trips. I had enough for food, enough to remain drunk, and now blessedly enough for a piece of ass. I was in a fine old mood that morning on our return trip. I'd taken mostly iron this time, plus some copper and a touch of tin. Our village was small enough that the smith was also the farrier. But we had a tinker and a wheelwright out there as well, which was helpful to keep prices competitive. Our smith liked iron mostly, but he worked in the other metals as well. And the tinker only worked in the softer stuff, so sometimes I could get them into a little bidding war if I played my cards right. The wheelwright liked iron as well, so, again, if my timing was good and I massaged the action well, I could get those two at each other's throats. It was a good lay. Not enough to get me rich, but damn sure enough to keep me drunk, and drunk was always enough. We rounded the bend in the road, and then I had to step double time to keep up with Ambrosius. He'd seen home at that point, and suddenly had all sorts of energy to get there. The slouch. I unhitched him, led him into his pen, got his harness off, and then scratched and rubbed him all over where the leather had matted down his hair. He let me know when he'd had enough by snorting happily, so I made sure he had some water, put some fresh straw out for him, and thanked him for his help. As I let myself out of the pen and latched the fence, he gave me a look with one cloudy eye. "Yeah, I remember," I said. "Tonight, after midnight." The little bastard nodded and went to sleep. The load wasn't my best, so it was no trouble to pull the cart into town myself. I did some math in my head as I went along, trying to imagine how much I might get on this round, and worried when the numbers I reached told me buying time with a woman might be tight. A couple of full marks were enough to put me over, but looking back in that cart as it rattled like an empty bucket along the rutted path, I had my doubts. I thought there might be some haggling in my immediate future if I wanted success in Plotzdorf. It was midday when I pulled the cart through the town square. My neighbors were out. Men plying their trades, women keeping their houses, children running around every damn place. I used to think of those children as future assholes. Oh, they were fine as children, most of them at least, but I knew how it worked. They were being raised by assholes, 2-1, and that's just the way of the world. At some point in her career as the goddess of fertility, Ing had decreed that people and plants should be of different types. If you stick a plant in shit, it grows up to be strong, to be healthy and beautiful. But if you stick a person in shit, he just grows up shitty. And as I walked through town, I looked around the buildings and over the stoops and work sheds through doorways and saw the shitty sneers of today's assholes. The very same assholes who are raising the assholes of tomorrow. I sneered back at them and spit into the dirt and dared them with my face to come run me out. I suppose it might seem an uncomfortable arrangement, but it was agreeable for me. We didn't like each other, not remotely, and it was good to know where you stood. I found Stavka at his forge, banging away on some glowing red hunk of the very stuff I'd just finished digging out of Erda, wondering to myself if he'd pinched the stock between his two fingers daintily before taking it up in the tongs to preserve himself from handling the Virm's bones. It was a ridiculous belief they all had, that it was all somehow impure until the first firing, and that it was cleansed after you made it glow. Morons. He gave me a look as I let the cart down, and it wasn't a sneer like the others gave me, but it wasn't what you'd call a smile either. He had a face like a man about to dip his hands in filth, and his nose twisted up as if he could smell me from across the yard. I doubted the bastard could smell me. I wasn't sure. I'd been on the mountain a good few days, but I doubted. "Hey, Stavka," I called. "You finally start work on that sword yet?" He was always boasting that he could make a sword, but no one believed him. I used to work him up into a froth over it when I was feeling black. "Udo," he sighed. "Once again you demonstrate your ignorance. It would be idiotic of me to forge such a thing. I haven't any buyers, and there is no magistrate to sell me a writ of permission besides. You think I'll violate the law to prove anything to such as you? Don't you know what they'd do if they caught me?" "Fine, of course. I get it. It's beyond your skill. Let's just leave it alone." He seemed to grumble something under his breath, and the next strike of his hammer threw a shower of sparks everywhere. "What was that?"
"Nothing," he shouted.
He worked the bar over some more until the cherry glow faded to black, and then stuffed it back into the coals. He grunted at his son, who worked the bellows, and then joined me by the fence.
"Well, digger, what have you?"
"Udo?"
"Udo, what?"
"What is that? What's the problem?"
"Huh? There's nothing."
"How are you looking at my son in that way? What is it about him?"
"There's nothing. I wasn't looking at him."
"You were looking at him, I tell you."
"The fuck I was." He put a fat, scarred hand up on the fence and squeezed at the wood until it creaked.
"The fuck you weren't, Udo. You keep your filthy eyes off my son, eh? You look here, right at me. You have no business with him."
"Fine,
No fucking business at all, I says.
Fine, I get it. I wasn't looking at him anyway, you crazy idiot, but if I was, I won't now. Damn it. Listen, do you want to look at this, or should I come back at the end of your monthly? I pointed at the small heap in my cart. Stavka straightened so he could look down his nose, first at me and then the cart, and said,
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I need any of it.
I laughed. What? Come off it. It's been 3 weeks since my last visit. You're telling me you haven't worked through the last pile? Business is slow, or people are just starting to get wise? What is it? They're seeking someone competent elsewhere? He smiled at me, and I didn't like the way it looked. People have many different smiles that aren't friendly at all, and I've seen most of them. Sometimes they smile in a way that says they're about to take a swing. That's all right, that's a useful smile. It just tells you not to be there when the fist comes, and then you can swing back and things proceed in an orderly fashion. It's not a friendly smile, but it's a good smile, if you see what I mean. But then there's the type of unfriendly smile that says something different. It's a smile that says the man wearing it doesn't need to swing, that he doesn't need to do anything at all. The smile says he only needs to sit back and wait and let things play out, and if he's patient, everything will work the way he wants. That smile's no good at all because the way he wants things to go is bad. It's bad for you, and you can't read it. There's no way to know what's coming, where it's coming from, or even if it's coming at all. That smile is a miserable fucking shadow to live under. And right then, Stavka was wearing it and giving me every bit. He strolled over to a barrel covered with an old leather apron. Still smiling, he pulled the apron off, and I saw a stack of raw iron much larger than it should have been. I stared at it for a while, confused. And then I realized there was more wrong than just the size. What, by hell, is going on here? That's a fresh load. It hasn't rusted properly. Where'd you get that?
It seems you have a bit of competition, Udo, he smiled, the whore son.
I looked at that pile and tried to think of something to say, but nothing came. Looking at it, I felt all hope of haggling up my price evaporate into the air.
I'll give you 3 bits for that sad excuse.
He threw a disinterested wave at my cart. I was still staring at the barrel. Who was it? Who, by all the gods, was going out to dig? Had someone new come into town to settle? I thought not. That kind of thing generated gossip for several days. No, not a new digger. Someone already here. But who? Stavka? Could he have become so sick of dealing with me that he dug his own stock? I looked at him as he returned to the forge. No, that was insane. A smith was a respected profession. He wouldn't risk that to cut me out. But who?
Take it or leave it,
he called, and set in with the hammer. I could hitch back up to Ambrosius again, head on to Plotzdorf, or maybe the next town beyond. But no, that wasn't any good. Those were large towns, lots of people there. The competition would be worse. Who was it? Who the fuck was moving on my market? I finally said, Yeah, fine, but I'm only selling half. And I hated the sound of my voice more than his. We both knew he'd beaten me, and we could both tell it was so from the sounds my mouth made. He pointed at the barrow with his hammer, and then without looking back at me, pulled 2 coins from his purse and tossed them over the fence into the dirt. It was the same story over at Anderlin's place. Anderlin was the local wheelwright in the village. Once a traveling tradesman, his cart busted an axle halfway through the town square, and rather than fixing it, he decided to put down roots and open a shop. I think he must have realized that Stavka was overworked and that he could get up his own thing without too much fear of Stavka running him out of town because of it. Still, I don't understand how that could have been good for business. that the wheelwright couldn't be bothered to fix his own cart. The people in that village were apparently more trusting than me. Anderlin was a good source of money when custom over at Stavka's was slow. Much of the time he would only make wooden wheels because that was all anyone wanted to pay for. But a wooden wheel splits like a son of a bitch if you hit a rock just right. So, sometimes the locals traded up to a banded iron hoop after a few wheels were rendered useless. There were some farmers doing pretty all right in our territory as well, and they never fucked around with that all-wooden junk. Anderlin did pretty well. He was out in the yard when I arrived, pulling a draw knife over a hunk of lumber as thick as my leg. He seemed to sense I was there, though he never looked up, and in his high, wheezing voice said,
"Too late, Udo, I've been seen to."
"Seen to how? You're married, and I don't screw for money." He nodded at a barrel and continued scraping away at the wood. There was a scrap of sheepskin over the top, and when I pulled it away, there was fresh iron at the bottom. "Son of a whore," I said. "They got you, too." Anderlin nodded sadly. Well, do you need any more?" Anderlin shrugged.
"Guess I could always use more, but need?"
"Scrape, scrape, scrape. Well, damn it. Damn all of it."
"Time for your trip?" he asked.
"Time for... yeah. Yeah, pastime."
"So go get a cheaper one."
"Oh, it's not the same. Gods be damned."
"Watch that blasphemy around my yard, Udo."
"Sorry." I watched him work away at the log. It was an easy thing to watch. Anderlin kept his tools sharp, and the blade pulled up curls of wood like little wisps of smoke. They all tumbled down around his knees and at his feet. Before long, I realized I was staring, and had to accept I didn't know where to go or what to do, and I became very blackly mad.
"Was there anything else?" he asked.
"Hell, how much will you give me for this?" I tilted the cart so he could see inside. Anderlin winced when he saw it.
"I could do a half mark."
I wanted to kiss him. It was rather more than Stavka the cunt had allowed. "Done." He must have sensed the relief in my voice. He smiled as he rose from his work, came over to join me at the fence, and handed the money over. I looked at his hand a moment and asked, "Don't you want to throw it to the ground?" He shook his head slowly.
"People are cruel."
"Obviously, but they could start being cruel to you as well." He didn't move, just kept holding the money out. He never looked away from me either. I always liked Anderlin. I unloaded the rest of the iron into the barrel while he went back to work with the knife. When I was finished, I asked, "So who is it that sold you this other?" The knife stopped cutting, and we both waited together a while, quietly, while he worked it over.
"Not sure I should say."
"No? Why is that?" I asked. He just looked at me. "Come on, what am I gonna do? Drop the glove on him?"
"Well, no, but..."
"Well, tell me then." I'd pushed too far. I could tell just by looking in his eyes. I put my hands up to let him know it was all right and thought about things a while. I thought them over pretty hard, harder than usual, and asked myself how badly I wanted to know. And after working through the drunken fog that always seemed to cloud my mind, I had to admit I wanted to know badly. I fished out the money Anderlin had paid only a moment before and offered it to him over the fence. When he saw what I did, he looked shocked, maybe almost guilty, as if he'd pushed me to give up the money and knew it. It was a happy thought for me. I liked Anderlin well enough, but he had something I wanted, and if making him feel like a shit could get the job done, well, that was how it would be. I could see him hesitating, though, so I said, "Come on, Anderlin, let's go. You can afford to turn your nose up at free stock? No man is that rich, not out here on the edge of Erda. No one does so well out here as to turn down free stock.
You can afford to give it away, though, eh?
I smiled. My needs aren't as complicated as yours. He worked that over a few seconds before giving in. It was wonderful. I could see it happening. The rounding of his shoulders, the bending of his spine. He gave in to himself before he gave in to me, and I could see him giving it all. And it was truly wonderful. He came back to the fence and collected his money.
Nix,
he whispered into his shoulder. Oh, I said. I nodded and thanked him for his help, collected my cart, and as I passed by the front stoop of his little home, I paid his wife respect by averting my gaze so she would not have to look on my face. She was a twat, was Anderlin's wife. But I liked Anderlin quite a bit, and so I spared her the sight for his sake. I made my final stop of the day over at Barrow's place. Barrow the Tinker, who had a large wagon and made the pilgrimage every year to Schwerin, where I understand he did quite a killing, especially if they were holding a festival of some sort. They held at least one festival every year, the Schweriners, and every 5 years they had a great festival, with all sorts of games and contests, various combats. In the north of Erda, where my little village was, we still held to the old games, using them as a tool to keep the blood down between the various tribes. It worked well. There hadn't been a real raid of any note in living memory, not for as long as any of us could recall. But our little celebrations didn't compare at all to what they held down in Schwerin, not for scale or scope. And Barrow made that long journey with two horses and a hired guard, and he always came back laden with plenty of money and brand new tools of the finest quality. Stavka hated his guts. I didn't feel one way or the other about Barrow myself, but if Stavka disliked him, it only served to make me regard Barrow with a favorable eye. He seemed a fair man. There wasn't anyone else in the village that had a need for copper, lead, or tin, so he could have put the blade to me pretty well as far as prices went. He never did, though. Not that I could tell. He seemed to trade pretty straight across the table, as we like to say. We didn't have a great deal of back and forth between us. Nix hadn't gotten to Barrow yet, or he just hadn't dug up anything that Barrow could use. Whatever the case, I didn't have to be demoralized with the Tinker the way I had with the others, and I came away from that interaction up a full mark. I decided it wasn't going to get any better than that, so I took my cart home, buried the money in the floor, pulled out a small cask of beer from the cold cellar, really just a shallow grave in the floor that I kept covered with some boards and a deer hide, and drank. It's a funny thing about being drunk. It's a feeling I enjoy, the best feeling, but do it too much, and everyone around starts to get that look in their eye, that sidelong look, the look that starts to tell you stories about yourself. Look at this man, they must think. Look at how much he drinks, and at how loud and angry he gets when he does it, and look at how he's fouled his clothes, and at his rheumy eyes and greasy hair. It's odd, that look and the stories it brings. Odd how you can be in such a state and be just fine with it. But then when you see yourself in that state through the eyes of others, you start to hear those stories in your mind, and you realize it's not just fine. That none of this is fine. I drank alone as often as I could, preferring to purchase whole casks down at the alehouse and bring them home where I could be in peace and not hear all those stories. I liked drinking, liked being drunk. I liked the fog, and how hard that fog made it to think, and how even the memories that the fog couldn't kill stung less. It was a good way to be. I still like to get that way sometimes, but then I have to take an earful from Erpicia, which is tiresome but manageable. Riza is a different story altogether, though. It's hard to see the look he gets in his eyes when I bring on a good fog. Riza gets a good look in his eyes, and it reminds me of Ambrosius when he died. and I have to look away because it's too fucking terrible. Ambrosius was still alive on that night, though, and I'd not yet met Riza up in the mountain, as naked and dumb as a lost babe, nor had I yet mistaken Epicia for Ring. Things were far simpler, as I think I've already said, and it was still a good thing to get blackly drunk. I worked at getting blackly drunk that night. Worked at it harder than I worked at digging, or any other thing, and my efforts were well rewarded before long. I don't recall when the knock came at my door, but Sunna had given way to his sister Synthgunt, and it was dark in the evening outside my little shack. I had an old shard of iron that I hid under the rags I used for a pillow, something I kept around in case anyone decided to come around and rob me after I'd sold off my haul. I retrieved it, opened the window to let in Synthgunt's meager light. I could drink, piss, and shit in the dark with little trouble, but I wanted to see if someone was there. And called, "Who's that?"
"This is Nyx out here."
"Oh?"
"Yeah."
"What do you want, Nyx?"
"Well, not... that is... hey, look, can you open the door, Udo?"
I did. I opened it slow in case he had a friend along, and then when I saw he was alone, I poked my head out to look around.
"What are you looking for?"
he asked. "You're alone?"
"Well, yeah. What is this?"
"Hey, you'd better come in here," I whispered. He was mostly just a dark shape, but I could make out enough of his features to see him roll his eyes.
"Oh, well, thanks."
He nudged past me. I looked around outside one final time just to be sure. Then I closed the door and used the iron spike to lock the latch. When I turned around, I could see he was heading for the table to sit down, so it was no trouble at all to slide up behind and crack him in the back of the head. Nyx surprised me that night. We'd known each other a while, and he always seemed more of the docile type. Kind of meager, you know the kind. If he disagreed with you, it didn't take much to change his mind. You just repeated your position several times at him until he began, always slowly at first, to nod his head. You knew you had him when he muttered the word, "Yeah." He just always seemed like a pushover to me, which is why it shocked me when he spun and cracked me across the jaw. It was quite dark in that little shack of mine, but when Nyx connected with my face, everything went white inside my head, and it was like Sunna himself had exploded behind my eyes. When the flash went away, I realized I'd sat down on my bed, and I could see the darkness of his body looming in front of me. I could hear him breathing heavily, jaggedly. And then he said, "Udo, what's your—" I'm a strong man, but only strong for my size. Many years of swinging a pick and leaning into a spade have given me hard, rocky shoulders and arms ropey with good muscle. My back is the strongest thing on me. Throw just about anything up on my shoulders and I can lug it around longer than most men. But I'm not a large man, not even if you squint your eyes and use your imagination, and I've never had what the old veteran soldiers call knockdown power. I've always had to make up for that by being vicious and angry. Nyx seemed to think I'd had enough since I was sitting down on my bed. Thought it was safe to have a word with me. It was a perfect time to attack. I launched myself into his gut and was barely present enough to hear the wind rush from his mouth as I drove him back into the wall. I think I remember some shots to my back when this happened. Probably Nyx hammering down on me, though he couldn't know how little the blows to my back would bother me. That's what I thought anyway, until one fist found my kidney. I didn't lose my footing to that shot, but it sure did slow me down. I'd been pummeling his ribs when the hit came, and I had to stop and just kinda stand there, holding onto his waist while I waited for my body to catch up. Nyx seemed to sense he'd found something special and sent another blow down after the first. I felt my ass loosen on that second shot and realized I'd better do something fast. Do something very fast or end the fight swimming in my own shit. I pulled him down to the ground then, and things got too messy to keep track of beyond that. We rolled all over like a pair of idiots, both of us throwing a few more punches, none of which had anything behind them. It was just too damned hard to put anything together as we rolled around on top of each other. We resorted to butting heads, clawing, biting, throwing knees, cursing, pulling, and every other dirty trick we'd ever learned on the cobbles in the back alleys. We fought to a draw eventually, laying there on the dirt floor, panting, gasping for every last breath. Nix had me by a testicle, and I could feel the sick ache all the way up in my chest. I froze, because that's all you can really do when someone launches a sustained assault to your balls. You just lock up and pray to any of the gods you think might still like you. If you're some kind of demigod, maybe you can fight through that kind of pain, but I haven't yet met the man with that ability. I whimpered.
Oh, hell, Nix, let me go. Let it go, you bastard fuck.
Leg hurts.
What?
Let he go first, asshole.
I realized I'd gotten a couple of fish hooks in. Two fingers under the cheek and another into his eye socket. I pulled them away, and then blessedly I felt him release me as well. We rolled away from each other, gasping like men pulled from the ocean. It was dark enough that we couldn't see each other laying on the floor like that. There was a shaft of silvered light falling across the table, which lit a portion of the bed beyond, but all else was a flat darkness that could have stretched on for miles. I heard Nix off to my left, coughing between breaths. I made to speak to him, but then my stomach lurched and I had to scramble for the pot. I braced into the floor and heaved, thanking Godan all the while that I'd emptied the thing the last time I used it. Sometimes, oh, call it most times for the sake of accuracy, I was too drunk to bother.
What? What is your problem, Udo?
Nix croaked. Somewhere behind me, I heard him spit. I'd finished retching and wiped at my mouth. Don't spit in my house, you fucking animal.
I spit out your window, shithead.
Well, then you're spitting into Ambrosius's house. Don't do it. Step outside if you're gonna do that shit.
Sorry.
All right. We fixed up the chair that had been knocked aside during our disagreement. There was only one. There used to be two. But I guess we killed one of them in the fray. I clucked my tongue at the loss. At the time, I thought it might be fixable, but I think I ended up burning it for warmth later, if memory serves. I settled into the chair that had survived, massaging my infuriated balls, and Nix settled down across from me on the cot. The light fell across his face, and seeing what I'd done to him, I winced.
"Is it bad?" he muttered.
"That eye's beginning to close. I think we'd better get some alcohol on it." He shrugged.
"I'd rather drink it."
I nodded to this. It's hard to argue with wisdom voiced so obviously. He looked at me with his good eye and sighed.
"Well, whatever possessed you, Udo?"
"Yeah, you know." He nodded and at least had the decency to seem shamed.
"I guess you heard."
"Why would you do it to me, Nix? I thought we were pals." He looked miserable.
"I had to do something, Udo. No one will hire me anymore. They all say I'm too much of a drunk."
"You are too much of a drunk."
"Well, yeah. Still, I have to make a living somehow."
"But digging?" I demanded. "You had to go for digging? I'm the only friend you have in this village."
"Don't bullshit me, Udo. You don't like anyone. You tolerate me because I'll share my beer."
"Well, okay, yeah, but that's a basis, man. Can't you understand how that's a basis?"
"I don't know how to do anything, Udo. No one will take me on as an apprentice. I'm too old and too drunk all the time. Digging is the only thing I can do. It doesn't require any learning to do it."
I thought about that. It was true, being fair to the poor wretch. The ability to dig was about all he had left. That or prostituting himself, and he would starve doing that. He was not a pretty man. I said, well, couldn't you take it a few villages over, so we won't have to compete with each other?
There are few enough here who need my services, Nix.
This is really going to fuck up demand. He didn't answer. He just sat there looking down at the floor stubbornly through the one good eye.
Nix.
He looked at me with a face about as miserable as I'd ever seen.
I don't know anyone in the other villages, Udo. I don't know any friends like I do here.
Oh, by Seek's Neat, you poor bastard. I shuffled over to the bed, very gingerly favoring the mutilated ball, and dug out something sweet, brown, and fiery. One clay mug and a shallow dish had survived the fight, so I set these on the table and filled them by the pale light.
I pushed the mug toward Nix and drank from the dish.
After a while, he joined me.
I'd come around to split my earnings with you, he said after he finished.
That just made me feel worse, so I said,
shut up, Nix,
and refilled his mug. We drank together in silence. Eventually, my testicles stopped throbbing and I was able to think more clearly. How much did you make? He produced a purse and dumped its contents out on the table. I fingered through the little pile and grimaced. I'd seen those piles of iron he sold around town, and they were bigger than his little stack of money suggested. Far bigger.
Tears inflamed asshole. Nix, you gave it all away. You practically gave it away for free. He seemed to shrug into himself, so I said, hey, easy. Damn it, Nix. I really wish you'd come to me before you set a price.
You wouldn't have let me dig if I came to you before.
I was forced to nod at this. He was right.
Anyway, he continued. I came to split that with you so you wouldn't be sore. I knew you'd find out.
I pushed the little stack of coins across the table. Keep it. You won't even be able to feed yourself if I take any. He seemed to be saddened by this, but didn't argue as he scooped the coins back into his purse. He made it disappear under his filthy shirt, drained off the rest of his mug, and refilled for the both of us.
You headed to Plotzdorf? He asked.
Yeah.
Figured. It's been a few months. I supposed you must have enough by now.
Not quite enough. No thanks to you.
I'm sorry, Udo.
Yeah, I know you are. He was quiet, and I could tell he had something he wanted to hit me with, but couldn't think of how to do it. Out with it, I said.
I guess you'll need someone to come around and look after Ambrosius while you're gone.
I'm not paying you, Nix.
No, I didn't think you would. It's just that...
Well, why don't you stay at my place while I'm away, Nix?
It'll be good to know that the only person robbing me is a guest. He flinched and said,
I wouldn't rob you, Udo.
Well, you spent all day doing as much. Can you tell me you won't drink everything under this roof while I'm gone? What god will you swear by?
I won't, he whispered.
Won't drink?
Won't swear.
As I suspected.
I'll say a toast to you while you're gone.
I sucked the last bit from my dish and refilled for the both of us.
Shut up and drink, Nix.